Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our roundtable discussion with the wonderful subject of God. We are recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, which stands strong, a beacon of light to our city, our nation, and our world. And we are so grateful that you all could join us this morning. We will begin with our morning prayer.
I'm reading this morning from Addenda of Collectania, page 19, two excerpts from there. The kingdom of heaven is God's government of his ideas, his wise and compelling enforcement of law, his unerring jurisdiction. I am a citizen of his dominion, governed by his laws, and protected by these laws. My affairs are administered justly, harmoniously by these laws. The laws of divine principle operate because infinite power and intelligence are back of them, not because we invoke them. And they no more stop working than the laws of this country. You are the child of the loving God, surrounded and protected by infinite love. There is no hatred or evil to frighten you. You have no disease. You have nothing to fear. You are not in danger. You are entirely well and continually held in the presence of God. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful, thank you.
Yeah.
And take care on the watching point.
Watch number 44. Watch. What we are working for in science is an absolute trust in God as the goal of all our efforts. Otherwise, why did Mrs. Eddy write the following? Quote, have trust in the one Father and Mother God. Without fear or doubt, do not fear the physical. Just ask for light and goodness. We must talk more closely with God. Bring him nearer to us, more like the old style of praying. We must feel and know that God is what we live in, like the atmosphere or sunshine all about us. We must rest more in God, give up all to God, ask for your daily bread, enough for today. A child with its mother does not ask all the time for food and clothing for tomorrow or next week, but runs along happily and trusts its mother's care. So must we do. End quote. It is vitally needed in times of mental weariness or confusion, and also when a student is in danger of believing that he is the one doing the mighty works. Once a splendid student made a shipwreck of his career. When Mrs. Eddy was asked why, she replied with tears in her eyes, quote, the dear boy believed that he did it, end quote. At such times, it is a saving grace for one to turn to God in absolute humility and say with the simple meekness of the Father, Father, Mother, of myself I can do nothing. Thou doest the works, and I trust in thee as a little child.
Thank you. Beautiful. The simple meekness of the master. Yes. So, yeah. Comments.
Well, I did love this watch. I mean, but when it says we must feel and know that God is what we live in, that was the part that I've been working on since coming here, is not to just say the words, but to feel God's presence, his love. And that's been helping. It's so much better since coming here.
Thank you. Who else is speaking?
That was me. Just reminds me of, I think there was a some writing about, I think his name was James Neal, was one of her really great students, doing really good healing work, and was getting a lot of praise. And she, I read somewhere where she warned him about allowing the love of mortal applause steal away his ability to, you know, allow his head to get swollen, allow him to lose humility and not be able to heal the way he was able to when he was humble. So sort of reminds me of that.
Very much. Thank you.
It's always remaining humble, right? Always knowing it's God doing it. I and my Father are one. Even Jesus said that, you know, then we have to know. We have also to say that without humility, we can't do this. Not at all. Also, the part about trusting God means a lot. I mean, that's why we pray. If we're praying, is because we have some faith in it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, you wouldn't be praying if you didn't have some faith, mm-hmm. even if it's only as a grain of a mustard seed.
Well, I was just going to say, I'm pretty sure that James Neal was on the church board after Mrs. Eddy passed and was part of, you know, the getting rid of the estoppel clauses and all that kind of stuff. So
was he?
Obviously, he didn't take
it. Sure.
Wow.
Didn't take that.
And see, that is what happens. And it's a danger always. And people start out really well and then they get heady. They get arrogant. They think they know, and it's never them. It's God, and they're not taking the time to pray and do their work and keep their thought right and clear and peaceful, and they're not getting the messages from God, then trouble starts.
That's why one of the things I found is the number one person you have to protect the church from is yourself.
You
have
Thank
to
you.
Make sure that you're doing right, you're thinking right, not worry about other people.
Yeah, no, that's very, very true. Once you think you're worrying about everybody else, you're missing where you need to work.
Say that too. That the hardest thing sometimes is to get yourself out of the way. As is said all the time, and just to know that there is no other selfhood but God, and it's only God doing the work, and it's not you saving the world from their bad thoughts. It's knowing that they have that only mind also. So
thank you.
This was a wonderful watch.
Yes, that's very true. Not saving the world, knowing everyone has this mind. That's saving the world.
Humility gives us the ability to know that we are not afraid because God is with us. We are in a close relationship with God.
Thank you.
Having human intervention.
Yes. Mm-hmm. If you think you're doing it, next thing you're afraid, you're prideful, then you're shamed. It's you jump right into the mortal mind of affairs. Thank you, Zeri.
Yeah, you doubt.
Oh, and another thing, Mrs. Evans or Mrs. Eddy warns us. You know, you can't be a part-time Christian Scientist. And in other words, you can't be, you know, praying to God part of the time for some things, and then the rest of the time either being fearful about a circumstance or being personal about a circumstance, thinking there are things that you can do, or worrying about things that you can't do. You can't go either way. So we need to establish a strong relationship with God. And, you know, the challenge for all of us is to keep that relationship strong all the time.
And I pray that. Go ahead, Lawrence. What?
No, I was just saying he's ever present. So we have to know that ever presence. Yeah, ever.
Yes, ever present. And I pray that this roundtable will enable people to feel close to their Father, Mother, God. And I love this definition of what Mrs. Eddy describes as God in this watch. And to bring him nearer, like the old style of praying. This meant so much to me at one point when I was newer in science, but all the, you know, God is mind and all of that, I had trouble with that. It seemed very abstract. Now, some people identify with that kind of definition of God, but I had trouble with it. And I remember reading this and how much it meant to me. I studied it a lot, you know, to live in God, like the atmosphere of sunshine that's all around us, mm-hmm. to rest in God, to give it all to God, ask him for your daily bread just for today. And then as a child, you know, if you run along with your parents, you're not worried. You just know they're going to take care of everything. It's a wonderful feeling to feel that way.
Yeah.
I love this. So thank you. Beautiful watching point for the week. And along with the humility and the lesson, very important, Second Chronicles, if my people which are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land. And this is what we all must be doing for ourselves, or, you know, those we love, but also our nation and the world. This is a requirement to humble ourselves. We've gotten so heady in so many ways. And in the lesson too, I think it's very interesting that there are two examples of use not liberty. You see, God does give us liberty. God has given the United States of America a great privilege of liberty and freedom. He certainly started that way. But it says, use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another. And then again, use your liberty, ye also as lively stones are built up a spiritual house and holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Jesus Christ as free, and not using your liberty for a cloak of maliciousness, but as the servants of God. So this can be the problem, just like people getting heady and losing their humility. People have their freedom and they use it for the flesh. So what does that mean?
Well, worldly things, you know, that possessing, getting things more and more. But that's not what it's all about, freedom.
Thank you. Instead of in love serving one another. And so then what does it mean to use your liberty for a cloak of maliciousness?
You're free to do whatever you want for your own gain and for your own self, and not thinking of others or the consequences of what you're doing or thinking, you know, not thinking of how it's going to affect other people.
Thank you.
Liberty is to be able to obey God.
Go ahead, Lauren.
Our freedom that he gives us is to do right, to do obey his law, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah, and Mrs. Eddy tells us we have the freedom to do right, but we do not have the freedom to do wrong.
Okay.
We do not have the freedom to deceive other people so we can steal from them.
Or even to maliciously, you know, do things. Because you've got the money and the power and so-called freedom to maliciously harm others. That's a cardinal sin.
Yeah.
So
watch it.
Yep. Watch it. And this is where, you know, we get into big trouble. And we've seen it. Mrs. Evans used to talk about it in the Christian Science movement, using the liberty for the flesh, where I've talked about it before. You get your health, you get wealth, you get whatever you seem to want, and then you just go to sleep. Sleep on.
That is not the end all and be all.
No.
That is not the objective.
Whatever you're given, you're to use in the service of God. Whatever's given to you, that's what this says. Twice it says it. But in love, serve one another, but as servants of God. That's how we use our liberty, our freedom, and all the good that God has given us to serve others. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Well, no, I was just saying that when things seem to be harmonious humanly with your health and your wealth and whatever, that's when you really have to be on your toes, because, you know, that animal magnetism seems to come along when you're not watching. So just because things seem all sweet and calm, you still have to be with God all the time. And that's how you know that you're protected from that.
Thank you. And that's where it comes in, that, you know, you love God with your whole heart, mind, and soul, as the lesson also says. So you can't be taken off. And just remember what it used to be like before you found God, how horrible it was.
Yeah.
And all of us have that right. When you think you can't find God or you don't know God, that's error talking. You do know God. Just listen. He's right there with you. Try listening instead of telling him things. Listen, he's right there always. Of course you know God. You were born to know God.
That's why you were created. You don't know anything else.
What's that?
In truth, you don't know anything else.
Absolutely. So listen, he's right there. Don't say you don't know him. You do know him. And acquaint now thyself with him and be at peace. And spend some time getting to know him and communing with him and being grateful. That's why being grateful is so important, because gratitude is in many ways God with us, because you're acknowledging all that he's done. To be so grateful for life itself. All right, you can read the golden text.
Okay. Exodus. My presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest.
There we are. And what Florence said earlier about the presence of God with us, ever present. Gary sent some beautiful articles, and two of them are on that, the ever presence of God, which we'll go into. But first, Nancy, hear what Mrs. Eddy says.
Yes, and it went with what you just said about acquainting ourselves with God. She writes in prose work, if God be for us, who can be against us? If he be with us, the wayside is a sanctuary, and the desert a resting place, peopled with living witnesses of the fact that God is love. God is universal, confined to no spot, defined by no dogma, appropriated by no sect. Not more to one than to all is God's demonstrable. God is demonstrable as divine life, truth, and love. And his people are they that reflect him, that reflect love. Again, this infinite principle with its universal manifestation is all that really is or can be. Hence, God is our shepherd. He guards and guides, feeds and folds the sheep of his pasture, and their ears are attuned to his call. In the words of the loving disciple, my sheep hear my voice, and they follow me. Neither shall any man pluck them out of my hand. God is a consuming fire. He separates the dross from the gold, purifies the human character through the furnace of affliction. Those who bear fruit he purgeth, that they may bear more fruit. Through the sacred law he speaketh to the unfruitful in tones of Sinai. And in the gospel, he saith to the barren fig tree, cut it down, why cumbereth it the ground? God is our father and our mother, our minister and the great physician. He is man's only real relative on earth and in heaven. David sang, "Whom have I in heaven but thee? And there is none upon the earth that I desire beside thee." Brother, sister, beloved in the Lord, knowest thou thyself, and art thou acquainted with God? If not, I pray thee, as a Christian Scientist, delay not to make him thy first acquaintance. Glorious things are spoken of you in his word. Ye are a chosen people, whose God is what? Even all. I loved that.
Thank you very much. Absolutely beautiful. Yes. Mrs. Eddy, pages 150 to 151 in Prose Works.
Mm-hmm.
What a beautiful description of our Father, Mother, God. And I love it. He's our Father, our Mother, our Minister, the Great Physician, and our only real relative on earth and in heaven. Good to remember these things. So if you think you don't know God, maybe you're not accepting him fully for all the wonderful things he is. And ye are chosen people, whose God is what? Even all. I was thinking, that's what makes you chosen. If you understand your relationship with God, if you understand these beautiful paragraphs of Mrs. Eddy, then you're a chosen people, not because he chose you, but you have chosen yourself to love him and to recognize who and what he is, whose God is what? Even all. So get to where you are seeing God is all. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. There is nothing but him. You see something that doesn't seem to be him, then you can know that that's just a false picture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's miscellaneous writings in prose works.
Thank you.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, that's certainly an easy way to stay active and awake, is just by keeping that knowledge in front of you. You know, we talked about going to sleep. You can't go to sleep when you're trying to actively acknowledge, you know, that God is all. And, you know, and from that allness, there's an expectation that we are to see God's love expressed as well.
Thank you. And there is Gardell's contribution.
Do I read it?
Yeah.
God is Love by Art Anker. God is love. We know this is true. Love is an active healing power, one expressed by me and you. We show this love by caring and God's abundance sharing. There's so much love we could give to help our brother truly live. Don't hold back this gift of God. The world needs the love you give.
Thank you. And that's it. And in a article Carrie sent, I loved it. I think it was by Duncan Sinclair, but it brings out the point. Jesus didn't tell people to go out and pray. He'd tell them to go preach the gospel, heal the sick, right? To make God active in your life. If you don't do that, and if you just sit in your chair and think about it, as Tony was saying, you've got to go out and live it. Live it. Be love. Be the truth, be life, and all that that entails. Beautiful. And Art Anker, we have a little booklet of his, this beautiful poems.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Martha Wilcox, this goes back to, I think, what Elizabeth was saying, but Martha Wilcox says on page 219 in the book we have, all false appearance is but the hidden existence of God. Again, God is all in all. So false appearance is the hidden existence of God. Right there in that aggravating spot is God. And if you look hard enough, and if you look past the material senses and what air is trying to tell you, you will see it. You will see him or her, God, Father, Mother. And as we know, that is how Jesus healed the sick. Now, these are some other, I found these beautiful poems in the Max Dunaway Daily Angels. There may be mist and fog, there may be wind and rain. There may be darkened skies till little light remain. There may be stony paths, there may be deep ascents. There may be slips and falls, there may be burdened scents. But just as surely as God is a God of love, then he will draw his child, lifting him above. These many earthly woes with his abundant grace, and bring him safely to his true abiding place. And then this, something to heal, something that God has left undone, that he forgot to give to his beloved son, or even worse, some great misfortune come about that God in his infinitude could not keep out? Something to heal, to remedy? How very odd that we should be so cruelly treated by our God. A God of love, we say, yet how could love allow such trouble for his child as we are claiming now? Something to heal, then it must be something apart from man forever held close to his father's heart. A false belief to be replaced by what is real and nothing more. There is no trouble man to heal. And then finally, God first in the early morning light, before I go upon my way, God gives me vision clear and bright with which to meet the coming day. God first, when I prepare to go, by some new path I come to see. Let me ask God, then I shall know what way his hand has set for me. God first, when hurried human will would take some course apart from love. Let me stop then and listen till I gain my guidance from above. God first, in every thought and deed, in every case, in every hour, to put God first is all I need. Mine is the blessing, his the power. Dear Max Dunaway. So, all right, so now to some of beautiful articles from Carrie. And this one that I mentioned, God Being Omnipresence by Ella Hoag. And she says, when Moses felt afraid to undertake the work God had given him to do because he recognized his own inadequacy, he asked God whom he would send with him to help him. Then God said to him, my presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest. This most wonderful promise which God made to Moses, all men must eventually prove belongs equally to them. Everyone must finally demonstrate that the fact of God's omnipresence is the solution of every human difficulty. Therein is the all-inclusive good which must be proved to be the annulment of every claim of evil. Then the work of Christian Scientists is, after all, but to admit always and forever the great fact of God's omnipresence, and therewith deny every supposititious lie of any other presence or power. In other words, to have but to obey the loving injunction of our precious leader in miscellaneous writings. Always bear in mind that his presence, power, and peace meet all human needs and reflect all bliss. And then it should make no difference to us what experience we may seem to be going through humanly, what the difficulty that must be overcome, what the dilemma from which we long to be delivered. In and through it all, there is the fact of God's omnipresence. There he is to teach us all necessary lessons. Above all else, let us always remember that he is not only all presence, but he is always all acting. However insistently error may be claiming to produce all sorts of evil phenomena, However it may be seeming to vaunt itself, it has never done anything, is not doing anything, and never will do anything. God alone is acting, and his all presence is but uncovering to the human consciousness all error, that it may be reduced to its native nothingness. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful fact. As Florence brought out earlier, it's the omnipresence of God that will heal everything. What is it that it can heal? What problem do you have that it can heal? You think there's some spot where God is not? The little poem says. You think you've got some spot somewhere that God isn't there? You think you have some relative that God isn't there? Mm-hmm. Some world condition that God isn't there?
Like Florence has said before, what makes you so special?
What makes you so special? So you think something like that. Mm-hmm. And that something is actually true.
That was
and always remember. Go ahead, please.
No, I mean, it is the saying God is omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient, omni-action. So we have to pay attention to the omni. He's all.
Thank you. That's a good quote. Pay attention to the omni. And that's why to work with that, excuse me, during your morning watch is very important till you get that sense of his allness. And as they say, don't leave home without it. Get that feeling of his allness. And don't let anything take it away from you, because anything that would try the physical senses, which is not presenting you with a true picture. So, and then in the second article also, this is my presence shall go with thee. This is Duncan Sinclair. And he says, nothing is of greater value than to know of God's omnipresence. For to know that God is omnipresent is to be conscious that life and love and truth and good are ever with us, and consequently that the supposititious opposites of life, love, and truth and good are not in reality present anywhere. It is this consciousness of the omnipresence of God good which destroys the beliefs of sickness and sin. Those false beliefs which so grievously torment the human race. Whosoever would be healed of these enemies to happiness and peace must strive to realize the allness of God's presence by affirming and reaffirming the truth with persistency and with assurance, keeping before the thought Mrs. Eddy's words in Science and Health, page 473. The God principle is omnipresent and omnipotent. God is everywhere, and nothing apart from him is present or has power. And what a wonderful statement that is, isn't it? Mm-hmm. One, you know, to learn and memorize early on, to know that. And every single time you open up your book, Science and Health, The Key to the Scriptures, approach it with great reverence, awe, humility. This is God speaking to you above the din of mortal mind. God is omnipotent and omnipresent. Nothing besides him is present or has power. That is the truth. Everything else, these are lies that we just have accepted, blindly accepted. This is the truth of our textbook and of the Bible, because doesn't the lesson say that God, once, twice have I heard this, that God is the only power? So what are you doing messing around with all these other things?
Just being fooled, that's all.
We're being fooled. And then another article from Carrie, which was, I thought, very good, very helpful, was about when the word arise, excuse me, arise means to wake up. So yeah, we're being fooled. So it says the modern English word wake is from the Anglo-Saxon arise. Then the word of Jesus to Jairus' daughter, damsel, I say unto thee, arise, could be rendered in plain English, young woman, I say unto thee, wake up. And the master's word to the sick of the palsy, arise and walk, could be read, wake up and walk. In the case of Lazarus, Jesus said, our friend Lazarus sleepeth, but I go, that I may awake him out of sleep. But to meet the dull senses of the disciples, the master finally said, Lazarus is dead. And it talks about this article, how do you wake up? One thing is the light. The light wakes you up, right? The morning light, any kind of light, the light of truth, the light of the scriptures, the light of science and health. It wakes you up, the waking up process. It's interesting, you know, even your body's attuned to go to sleep when it gets dark and to wake up at light. I can usually tell the minute that first ray, you know, creeps through the window. Wide awake. And then another way to wake up is the word, the voice. The voice is another awakener of men. We speak to sleeping children. We tell them to wake up. And Mrs. Eddy says that the disciples were wakened by their master's voice. Science and Health, page 35. So wake up. Don't be fooled by error, by what error is trying to tell you. And so, and then in another very beautiful, interesting article, I'll let Gary read this. It's called The Dream of Mortal Life by an RSM. And it, well, it speaks for itself, but it's about a man called is pronounced as I have it. Okay. I have it is his name. So go ahead. Since I've talked a lot.
Okay. He writes, a story is told of a wealthy man whom I will call Habit.
I have it.
The story, very much abridged, runs something like this. The man was rich in flocks, in herds, in money, in family ties, in respect and honor, and in all things that seem to make for comfort and happiness in this mortal life. One day a priest came, telling of a wonderful find of diamonds in a certain place. The rich man went to bed poor, for he had found discontent. He too must find diamonds. He sold his flocks and herds and took his departure. He would not seek near home. He would go afar, and he spent all in his vain search and was finally swallowed up by a tidal wave, a poor, outcast vagabond. Not long after Ah Habit left home, the man who lived on his place found in a little pool back of the house a shining piece of stone. It was a poor, shallow pool, hollowed out for the water to fill and covered with pebbles on the bottom. No doubt it was muddy. One had to wait sometimes for the spring to refill it after the camels had been watered. The man, attracted by the stone shining in the pool, picked it up and, pleased with its glitter, took it into the house and placed it on a shelf where he could often see it. It lay there some time, but finally the priest who had visited Ah Habit and who told him about the diamond mine, chanced to visit the place again. He was at once attracted to the shining stone. Where was it found? Out in the little pool. Any more? Probably. The owner had not noticed much being given to other things. The priest, interested, began looking about. And it was discovered that diamonds were there in plenty, for the shining stone was nothing else. the domain that Ah Havet had left to search for diamonds in other lands was literally sown with the precious stones. It is said that this was the site of the Golconda mines. To point a moral and adorn a tale so pertinent as this is hardly needful. We all overlook the things near us and think that the desirable things are afar off. The kingdom of God, good, is within you. Look within and find it. The pool may be shallow, perchance nearly empty, but there may be found the precious gems of truth, the truth that makes free. Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon thee. The glory, the character of the Lord, as some quaintly translated, is upon thee. Not shall be when you have become sufficiently good, but it is here, now and forever. Why this struggle for the very things we now have? It is not place, power, rank, or display that makes life worth living. It is life itself, and this we ever have, and that abundantly. Open thou mine eyes, that I may behold wondrous things out of thy law.
Now, isn't this just so exciting? We have like a diamond mine right within us. And of course, God enables you to recognize it, see it, take part in it, because he loves you. He's a God of love. And no one is excluded. Everybody. So I guess they're saying this was the finding of the Golconda mines. That's the diamond mines, right? Or what are they, in Africa? Does anyone know? Anyway, there are these mines full of diamonds. So, but you don't have to go there to get the real diamonds. They're all within you. A treasure trove of all good things right within you. Just listen. It's a listening thing, because God's speaking to you. So put away all your concerns and worries and your talk and hear what God is saying. He'll tell you everything you need to know about everything. You don't need to read. Well, sometimes it's helpful, but generally speaking, you don't have to read a lot of manuals. Sometimes it's helpful, I will admit. But generally, God is speaking directly to you with anything, including if you need to read a manual, which one to read and how to understand it. So he is your mind. And in that case, this becomes alive. He is your mind, your life, truth. And as you express all his qualities, you are a law of annihilation to everything unlike itself, Mrs. Eddy says.
That is much more valuable than any diamond or gold that you could ever find in the ground.
Thank you. And I found it interesting because it said he became poor. Do you remember why he became poor?
Discontented.
Yes, because he found discontent. He had had everything, and then this guy tells him about diamonds, and suddenly he was discontent with what he had and wanted more. That's how he became poor.
Yeah. And that's why the 10th commandment is, thou shalt not covet.
Gary's favorite commandment. But it speaks well of a lot of issues. It'll make you very miserable.
So don't go there.
Don't go there. So, and then another article along the same lines about shipwrecked sailors on the Amazon. And it says that this river is so wide at its mouth that far beyond the sight of land, its water is fresh enough to drink. Who knew, right? But the shipwrecked sailors, who had been suffering for days from want of water to drink, supposing they were still in salt water. So finally, someone signaled to them and said, drink, the water's clean and pure, it's not salty. In other words, it was all there, but they just didn't know it. So spend it just an exciting week finding your relationship with God and how it's all there, all health, all joy, vision, beauty, you name it, hearing, mobility, you name it, it's there. You just haven't tapped into your diamond mind. The kingdom of heaven is within you. It's very exciting. We should all feel so excited about this. So
something I've noticed through the years, I've seen people come through and, you know, they're on the search for truth. And they're so caught up in that search that they don't realize when they have found it here, and they keep looking. And then we hear about them later and they're looking into foolish things. So know when you found it.
Well, that is so true. And, you know, all this other stuff, Mrs. Eddy had it all, and we must be so grateful to her, what she's given us, and know that she will be recognized for what she's done. Not that that's terribly important, but in a way it is. It is right to acknowledge her.
I just was reading, I don't remember where, but she said that it was the Blue Book, I think, that acknowledging her had to do with protecting the cause.
Yeah, yes, that's right. Absolutely. Because anytime they want to discredit anything, they will get at the author. They will tell you that that person is a terrible person. And, you know, Wikipedia, all these things, they do it. You can't trust it. You've got to research for yourself, because you will be misinformed and perhaps miss something very valuable. And I haven't read in a long time, but I don't think they had a lot of good to say about Mrs. Eddy.
Not on Wikipedia, they didn't.
Not in Wikipedia, no. So that's why we have Tony as a website. And we should all go to that. And he's been changing it around with articles. These articles from Terry that are invaluable. That's like a diamond field. So Gary's going to read one now, too. It's a little bit long, so he'll start now.
Lively Stones is the title, by Ella Hogue. No figure of speech has been a greater favorite with writers of all ages than that of stones. The Bible contains examples almost without number of the use of stones as metaphor. When there was the wish to write of something reprehensible, we read of hearts of stone, stones of darkness, stones of emptiness, stones of stubbornly, while the purpose to commend would find expressions as tried stones, white stones, and so on. Christ is frequently referred to as a stone, a precious cornerstone, a living stone, an elect stone. Perhaps no use of the word can bring to students of Christian Science a more practical lesson than that which Peter indulged in when he spoke of the elect of his day as lively stones. We read in the second chapter of 1 Peter, quote, "Ye also, as lively stones, are built up a spiritual house and holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Jesus Christ," end quote. This contemplation of a stone as lively immediately presents something unusual to thought and sets one wondering as to the possibility of uniting such opposite qualities as those ordinarily attributed to stones, as, for instance, endurance, firmness, strength, stability, and those which belong to the usual definitions of lively, such as active, animated, energetic, buoyant, enlivening. When Peter goes on to say that these lively stones are built up a spiritual house and holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices, he really expresses the whole truth of right spiritual activity in living. For what does the offering of spiritual sacrifice mean, except the yielding of every material belief to the quick and instant necessity of expressing the qualities of good, that the spiritual structure of righteousness may appear? One of the most important lessons for all Christian Scientists is to have their stones fit in the universal structure. One great difficulty is that each one is often thinking more about his own stone than of the perfection of the whole structure. Because of this, he is apt to believe his stone is quite perfect as it is, and it cannot appear just as he presents it very well, then it need not appear at all. He argues to himself that all his praying and studying and working has enabled him to get so close to God, divine mind, that necessarily his stone must be perfect. But then it doesn't fit. So what is to be done about it? He must remember to be a lively stone. And today, this surely means the willingness to sacrifice even what may appear as beautiful to him if it does not join the presenting of a perfect structure. Today, stones still need much polishing. There is still many a rough corner here and many an excrescence there to be smoothed away. There is many a human opinion, many a human desire that must be sacrificed before the stones shall appear in all their beauty and perfection. Then Christian Scientists will do well always to remember to be lively stones, or as our leader tells us in Poems, page 76, quote, "Be awake, like this stone, be in thy place, stand, not sit," end quote.
Who knew about stones? Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.